This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 3rd of June 2016. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 3rd of June 2016. This week our editors were Sheila Shepherd, Irene Dowding, Jean Gardner and Jane Thomas. And your readers today are Shirley Parnell.
Hello.
Paul Newman.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. Well, the main headlines this week are Boris visit marred by clash, barracks on brink, new royal blood trail launched. So, may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Shirley?
Boris visit marred by clash. Boris Johnson, a historic monument and a man in a gorilla suit. That's not the start of a joke, but the violent scene which broke out at a Hampshire Brexit rally. Referendum activists clashed in Winchester as the former mayor of London brought his referendum roadshow to town last Thursday. Police are investigating claims a Leave campaigner punched a man dressed as a gorilla in the face and shoved a parish councillor off the six-foot-tall monument. Councillor John Romero has reported to police that he was pushed from Winchester's Buttercross. Hampshire police believe the same suspect may have punched the costumed ape who waved inflatable bananas and a placard during Mr. Johnson's High Street speech. The leading Tory visited on a busy market day and was mobbed by people as he made his way from the Winchester Royal Hotel. Snapping selfies, shaking hands with supporters, he was ferried through a 300-strong crowd to the top of the historic Buttercross. But the event turned sour when Otterbourne Parish Councillor John Romero fell 6 feet from the monument and landed on his back. The 64-year-old says he put a poster in front of Mr. Johnson's face, prompting a Leave campaigner to push him with his knee and send him backwards off the steps. He said the man smiled at him, offered no apology and was seen leaving the rally. Councillor Romero said, "I could have lost my life there. What has happened today has given me questions whether this is something I really want to do if I'm not going to be safe. It is not an acceptable form of politics. It is gangsterism." Police confirmed they were investigating both incidents, with a spokesman adding, "Both incidents are possibly thought to be connected in relation to the same suspect." Further allegations of assault have appeared on social media, with people claiming they were also attacked during the rally. Mr. Johnson was followed up the street by the gorilla man as he left the event. The protesters' sign said, "I eat five in a bunch, Boris," an apparent reference to Mr. Johnson's erroneous claim that EU rules banned supermarkets from selling more than two bananas in a bunch. A Vote Leave source said, "A number of campaigners tried to push onto the steps, including a man dressed as a gorilla, repeatedly trying to push into the crowd. We're shocked that anyone may have fallen off it. We'll wait for a police investigation. We do not condone any violence at events. There was a concerted effort to try and disrupt this rally from the Remain campaign." The debate continued after the cameras left, with supporters on both sides staying behind to chat. Jake Mace, a 17-year-old student at Peter Simmons College, said, "This is our chance to get our view heard and what we want for our future. We're the next generation and we stand with the EU." He added, This is mainly leadership position for Boris. I think he's doing this because he wants to be the next Conservative leader and not because he genuinely wants to leave the EU. Brexit supporter Lucy Hamilton, 66, said, "Some of the Remain people were apologising for the behaviour of some of the Remain supporters. They should have been listening to what Boris was saying." Speaking to the Hampshire Chronicle, Mr Johnson said, "Quitting the EU would bring a boom to Southampton Port, and controlled immigration would benefit Hampshire industry." He said, "Ports like Portsmouth and Southampton would see a boom as we would be able to take control of our economic destiny and set our trading ambitions globally. One of the deficiencies of the current EU system is that all our trade negotiations are conducted by the European Commission, a group of bureaucrats, only 3.6% of whom are from this country. People should be optimistic about their country, believe in Britain, don't believe the scaremongering. This is the moment, by taking back control, where we can show we stand on our own two feet and do better than ever before." Mr. Johnson also invoked Hampshire's ancient history, as he claimed King Alfred, the medieval king who ruled England from Winchester, would have backed Brexit. He said, "I think King Alfred would have wanted to see robust defence of British institutions to make sure that we were not subject to the rule of international powers or foreign bodies. I think that is what he stood for. He promoted the English Navy to achieve that, and I think he'd be a wholehearted Brexiteer." Early in the day, Mr. Johnson said promises on immigration had deeply damaged faith in our democratic system.
Let's have the second front page headline story from Paul.
Barracks on brink. The future of Sir John Moore's barracks, home to the Army Training Regiment near Winchester, is unclear after the Ministry of Defence admitted it is carrying out a review of its estate. A source told the newspaper that an announcement that the barracks will be sold is set to be made next month. He said top-level talks have taken place between the Ministry of Defence and Winchester City Council, and the intentions of the Ministry are to sell the land near Littleton. However, the leader of Winchester City Council, Stephen Godfrey, denied these talks had taken place, and the Ministry of Defence say it has no plans to sell the site. The source, when asked not to be named, said, who asked not to be named, said it is a significant reduction of the connection of Winchester with the military, but as they have been winding it down anyway, the impact might not be that great. But the site itself could be a great opportunity for Winchester to prosper. It is sad for the army to go, but not sad for Winchester. A Ministry of Defence spokesman said, we currently have no plans to dispose of Sir John Moore barracks in Winchester. However, the Ministry of Defence is conducting a review of its estate, which will be announced later this year. This work is ongoing, and no decisions about the future of individual sites, other than those that have already been announced, have been made at this point. Councillor Godfrey admitted there had been rumours swirling around about the future of the barracks, but said to his understanding no discussions between the Ministry of Defence and the council had taken place. He has urged the Ministry of Defence to ensure that the land is not sold for housing, adding, we will want to make sure that the MOD is aware of our views on the subject. If the Ministry of Defence do not need those barracks for military use, then that's a significant loss of employment to the local area. Therefore, we want to make sure that the site is retained for employment, because there are jobs there, and that is our focus. We want local people to have jobs. What I would worry about is if the Ministry of Defence is being pressured to get rid of land to sell it for housing. Winchester City Council will ferociously defend our local plan that does not require any houses on that site. And the local plan does not permit development in that area except for employment. And we do not have the need for any more housing to be allocated for the next 15 years, said Councillor Godfrey, a former soldier. In January, the Army Training Regiment, Winchester, was rated outstanding in all areas for its development of new fighters and instructors. Every year, around 1,000 recruits are put through 14 weeks of physical, mental and emotional training. The barracks opened in 1986, replacing Peninsula Barracks in the city centre.
Let's have the third and final front page headline story, please, Jane.
And this one is New Royal Blood Trail launched. Winchester's colourful past will be the focus of a new Royal History Trail, which has just been launched. Royal Blood was created after students at Winchester University researched the stories of royal births, deaths and visits. The trail is a partnership between the university and the City Council's Visit Winchester team. Part of Hampshire Cultural Trust's Royal Blood campaign, which will also see reenactments in the city and exhibitions across the county, it is hoped the innovative programme will engage new audiences. A talking King Alfred will also personally welcome visitors to Winchester before they embark on the trail. The Visit Winchester team has also redeveloped the Cheriton Battlefield Walk, and Hampshire Cultural Trust has unveiled two large-scale reenactments in Winchester and exhibitions and talks across the county. Senior lecturer in early modern history at the university, Dr. Ellie Woodacre worked with colleagues from the archaeology and history departments to create the content for the leaflet. Dr. Woodacre said, "The Royal Blood Trail is the second partnership project the university has undertaken with the Visit Winchester team, following the creation of a successful medieval Jewish trail last spring." And this is accompanied by a photograph of Dr. Ellie Woodacre and Councillor Steve Miller with the talking King Alfred, which appears to be a large bronze head and shoulders of King Alfred. It doesn't quite show how it talks, which should be an interesting experience.
And that concludes our front page headline stories. And now we're going to continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, Belgarum diary, first person, and editorial comment. I'll start with the death notices. Cox, Tony Cox, peacefully at home, aged 69. Dawson, Edna Millicent Dawson, peacefully aged 103. Dixon, Colin John Dixon, at home. Gaysford, Michael Richard Gaysford, at Winchester Hospital, aged 78. Gale, Angeline Joyce Gale, peacefully at home. Jones, David Howard Jones, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 68. Newell, Adela Lucy Barbara Newell, peacefully aged 97. Picknell, Jimmy Picknell. Pitkin, Anthony John Pitkin, peacefully aged 76. Reynolds, Richard Charles Reynolds, aged 68. Souton, Michael Sam Souton, peacefully at Sunrise of Winchester, aged 84. Stead, Beryl Strawn, nay Longbottom Stead, peacefully aged 87. Thompson, Ian Thompson, peacefully aged 77. Whale, Derek Whale, peacefully aged 81. And now we've got Christian comment read by Shirley.
Yes, it's headed "The UK, a post-Christian nation." And it's written by Rosemary A. Baker. The media is buzzing at the moment with the results of the various opinion polls for remaining in and leaving the European Union. But while reading this weekend, I came across a rather amazing statistic. For the first time in recorded history, those declaring themselves to have no religion have exceeded the number of Christians in Britain. Apparently, 44% of us regard ourselves as Christians, 8% belong to another religion, and 48% say they have no religion. Only 5 years ago, the number of people professing no religion was only 25%. The decline in Christianity is perhaps the biggest single change in Britain over the past century. For some time now, we've had to use our imagination to see Britain as a Christian country. Now, it is indeed more accurate to call us a secular nation with a Christian past and history. For some time now, the church attendance has been slowly declining, but many people still call themselves Christians when admitted to hospital and use the church for funerals, marriages and baptisms, giving their children Christian names. MPs and government ministers who profess to be religious are often mocked. Wearing a cross can be problematic for employees, and people often decline to swear on the Bible in court. Those of us who do profess a faith might worry that this loss of faith is the cause of much that is wrong with our society. However, this would be inaccurate. On the contrary, Britons are midway through an extraordinary period of social repair. A decline in teenage pregnancies, divorce, and drug abuse, and there is evidence of a rise in civic mindedness. What does this say to the Christian church of today and for its future? Is it still relevant? And is there a role? Indeed, these questions could be asked for all the major faiths and religions. I believe that faith is still important, and that as humans we do have an inherent need to believe in something other. It may be that our society is evolving the way it is because of our past, or it may even be that it is not a post-Christian phenomenon, but a pre-Christian one, and the churches should stand ready for mission and evangelism. The Methodist Church, most notably, but others as well, have just celebrated Wesley Day, the anniversary of John Wesley's conversion. Wesley was arguably Britain's greatest evangelist, but was very aware of the need for health and wholeness in those to whom he preached. There is still a great need for this ministry today, and it is evidence that churches that address this are flourishing.
We'll continue with the letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836. Or you can email news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk. Or there's the old pigeon post, writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, S0238AL. Now, there are 9 letters this week. We'll start with one read by Paul.
Out of Touch. This is written by Phil Gagg of St. Swithin Street, Winchester. Sir, I was interested to read in your May the 19th edition that Tony Wyman has produced a report on the need for more parking. I hope he will publish it, and that it contains at least some evidence. So far, he has offered only beliefs and prejudices and not made a rational case. This contrasts sharply with the careful analysis in the Winchester Action on Climate Change report you describe on your front page. People may wish to download the WINAC report from winac.org UK News, Car Parks Winchester Town Centre Evidence Strategy. Your editorial was very sensible. You are right to worry that more city centre parking would cause more congestion. Worse, it would raise the already illegal levels of toxic pollution, especially just outside your office. If Mr. Wyman wants more parking in the centre, he needs to tell us why he thinks increasing his profits is more important than reducing the 40 to 50 deaths per year caused by vehicle emissions in the Winchester area. He seems to be in denial of the high death toll his proposals will sustain and increase. He's the one who seems out of touch. If Mr. Wyman's business has problems, they may have nothing to do with car parking. Perhaps the proximity of three competitors has something to do with it. Perhaps it is his shocking attitude to customers. The problem is in retail, your customers are lazy, unquote. Research has shown that retailers are notoriously misinformed. They usually have no idea how people get to their shops and overestimate the role played by cars. Has Mr. Wyman surveyed his customers? Has he got data on how lazy they are? Has he noticed that the business bid figures show an increase in annual footfall figures in the high street since November 2013, when the council began to close Friarsgate? Has he read Rethink Parking by the Association of Town and City Management that warns against simplistic solutions? If we rely on Mr. Wyman's intuition, we will be in deep trouble. Real lives are at stake.
Second letter, please, Jane.
And from Chris Gillam on a similar theme, traffic concerns. Sir, it is always depressing that whenever actual evidence is forthcoming, there are prejudiced people prepared to dismiss it with anecdote. The WINAC parking surveys comprise actual data collected under specified conditions and which anyone can verify if they choose. The analysis of the data is according to normal statistical processes. Interpretation of the results and what they signify for policy is, of course, subject to debate and what the priorities of policymakers may be. A simple, indisputable fact is that traffic-induced air pollution in Winchester is above the legal limits and has a serious health implication. If the priority of Councillor Burns is that extra traffic somehow has a benefit that outweighs the health damage to Winchester citizens, then he needs to state it clearly so that when the fines are levied on the council, we will know who is to account for it. Mr. Wyman's assertion, Chronicle Letters May the 19th, that it is lack of parking that causes pollution is bizarre. Of course, there will always be stupid people cruising around the centre for 15 minutes looking for car parking when they could spend only 5 minutes walking from an edge of centre car park. But if you add more parking to the centre, it will attract more traffic. Presumably, that is why Mr. Wyman wants it. Until you have the same problem again, only with even more congested network. Mr. Wyman also tells everyone that they don't understand retail and asserts that his customers are too lazy to walk anywhere. Maybe he should look at the WINAC report. There he will find evidence, and it is only a part of the research evidence available that tends to the same conclusion, that it is the town centres that are the least accommodating to car transport that do the best commercially. Just imagine how much more footfall there might be in Parchment Street if shoppers were not presented with an intimidating, noisome and noisy barrier of traffic in St George's Street. And that was from Chris Gillam, Upper High Street, Winchester.
And this one is from Ellie Babbage and it's headed Celebrate Reunion. Sir, we've met before, but this year we are all reaching retirement age and would like to have a grand reunion to celebrate. We were all born in the academic year 1951-52 and attended Southampton Grammar School for Girls at the Sixth Form College. We were a lively year group with some memorable antics and achievements to our name, one of which was the formation of the Sixth Form Union. We are holding a bring and share lunch in Portswood on Saturday, September 24th, and even have a couple of teachers coming. So if you know of anyone who would be interested in attending, please contact me via my email address. Ellie Babbage, Cheriton Fitzpaine, Devon. And the email address is Ellie, that's E-L-L-Y, dot Babbage at hotmail.co.uk.
This is a letter from Doug Phillips of Stony Lane in Week, entitled Know Your Rights. Sir, there was a time when the Council Planning Committee allowed no public participation at its meetings. Now the public can attend and speak. This openness extends to major schemes such as Station Approach. I've lost count of the number of consultations, especially over Silver Hill. But what do we see? People complaining about insufficient consultation. What do people want? Developers visiting every home and giving each individual a right to veto the scheme. People should realise consultation is the right to have their views taken into account and not the right to their views scuppering a scheme. Doug Phillips, Stony Lane, Week.
And Kate McIntosh writes, going backwards. Sir, what is it with Winchester that it remains so steeped in complacency and so myopic that it is incapable of learning from the examples of other comparable cities, such as Chichester, Canterbury or York, where their successful strategies to deter the motorists from driving into their city centres and encourage walking and cycling have resulted in inner city vibrancy and better public health? If they cannot even learn from West Sussex, what hope that sights might be raised further afield to, say, Lyon, where the number of cars entering the city has fallen by 20% over the past decade, without even a congestion charging scheme? And even though Lyon's population is expected to rise by more than 10% over the next decade, the mayor is targeting a further 20% drop in car use. The car parks that used to run alongside the banks of Lyon's two rivers have been removed and parks opened in their place. Someone returning to Lyon for the first time in a decade would barely recognise the city. Birmingham, which vies with Manchester for the title of England's second city, has been following the experience of Lyon closely and is now embarking on its own 20-year plan called Birmingham Connected to reduce dependence on cars. For a city so associated in the public mind with car manufacturing, that is quite a step. In Waltham Forest, they have an increasing number of households without a car. Public transport is getting better. They have an increasingly young demographic, and in many of the developments being built, car parking is not a priority, so car ownership is not an option. Developers worried about this initially, but have come to realise that it doesn't pose a problem for the young professionals likely to be buying their flats, so have accepted the demands of council planning departments. Waltham Forest, therefore, has an increasing number of households without a car. Public transport is getting better. Meantime, Winchester marches with blind determination into the past, incapable of observing which way the wind of the future is blowing. And that is from Kate McIntosh, MBE, RIBA, West End Terrace, Winchester.
And this one is headed, My Gratitude for Role in Silver Hill. Sir, the start of the new municipal year brought something of a surprise with my being asked to lead a new council committee to establish a new game plan for the development of Silver Hill. The formalities and logistics have yet to be settled, but it will likely be known as the Winchester City Regeneration Group. And all those penciled in to join me are very excited by the challenge ahead. Without regurgitating the history, I would take this opportunity to acknowledge that it was a bold decision by the leader of the council, Stephen Godfrey, to offer me this position, and I thank him. I would also take this opportunity to assure the public that they will be fully consulted and that, although the new group will be undertaking a process that will take many months to complete, I welcome thoughts and contributions from anyone at any time. And this was from Kim Councillor, Kim A. Gottlieb, City Councillor, Alresford and Itchen Valley Ward, Avington.
This letter is from Julian Chisholm, who lives in Arthur Road, Hyde, entitled Misleading Claims. Sir, please may I correct the misleading impression of the European Union given by Tim Major's recent letter. The United Kingdom is no longer the sick man of Europe. As we hoped, our EU membership has brought sustained prosperity. A conservative estimate puts 5% of our gross domestic product per head directly related to being in the EU's single market. Other estimates suggest above 20%. Leaving the EU means damaging uncertainty, while staying, growth through the further development of the single market, especially in financial services. The EU's common agricultural policy ensures that overall the EU produces sustainably the high quality food we need at affordable and stable prices. Part of the common agricultural program support for farmers is given by tariffs on food imports so that they receive more than world prices on what they sell in the EU. This reduces the need for any for state subsidies and higher taxes. The National Farmers Union supports staying in because leaving risks lower support for farmers. The review of the Common Agricultural Policy spending Mr. Blair asked for was part of the drive to reform the CAP and stop the growth in its budget. By 2014, payments to farmers had been decoupled from production and farmer spending was down in real terms, despite the EU growing to 27 members. The idea that the EU spending is out of control is untrue. The financial framework for 2014 to 2020 shows a 3% reduction in real spending. The United Kingdom's 2015 net EU contribution of £8.5 billion brought us £85 billion of gross domestic product. Fantastic value. Julian Chisholm, Arthur Road, Hyde, Winchester.
And Peter Pooley writes, astonished by rant. Sir, I was astonished by the anti-EU rant from Mike Kennedy, Chronicle Letters, May the 26th, much of which he claims to be based on Brussels-based facts. I do not recognise any of his assertions as having even a loose connection with the realities that I observed during more than 20 years in and around the Brussels machine. I think many voters are in despair of being able to discern the facts of the case through the fog of rhetoric, shouting, unsubstantiated assertions and finger-wagging to which they are subjected daily. The European Movement, an apolitical body, is organising a series of public meetings aimed at examining the known and ascertainable facts which should properly underlie the great debate and help us to decide how to vote. No speeches, no speculation, no presages of doom, just a straightforward, calm discussion helped along by factual evidence from a small panel of experts. I will be at the meeting in Alresford, 7 p.m. on June the 3rd at the Recreation Centre. The organisers say all are welcome, and I'm sure that includes Mr. Kennedy. He may just garner a few bits of evidence to justify his visions of disaster. And that was from Peter Pooley, Station Approach, Alresford.
And this one is from Rebecca Beeney, and it's headed, Help Research. Sir, researchers at the University of Southampton are extending an invitation for individuals to participate in their research examining the relationship between chronic headache and processes of attention and interpretation. Individuals who experience headaches for 15 or more days per month are invited to take part. Participation will require one visit to the academic unit of psychology, lasting about an hour. During this time, you will be asked to complete two short computer tasks, followed by some questionnaires. If you are interested in participating or would like further information, contact Miss Rebecca Beeney, health psychology student. Agreed travel expenses will be reimbursed, and the telephone number is 07540 271 774. And that was from Rebecca Beeney, Health Psychology, University of Southampton.
And that was the last letter to the editor. So thank you to all of our contributors. Now it's time for your say. We asked readers if their vote on the EU had changed after the stormy visit of Boris Johnson. Paul has the answers.
Charlotte Wigginsworth, aged 35, a stay-at-home mum of Battery Hill, Stanmore, said, "I wanted to leave the European Union before he came, and now it has made my opinion even stronger." John Gerard, aged 40, builder of Alsford Road, Winchester, said, "I think we need to stay, and seeing what happened with the fighting and the scenes caused by the vote leavers really made it clearer. We need to not let these people win." Jenny Jacobs, aged 52, a receptionist at St Cross Road, Winchester, said, "He was great, and I think he got his point across. I am still undecided, but Boris made a good case." Finally, Michael Trapp, 78, retired of St Cross Road, Winchester, said, "He is a very inspiring speaker, and his visit only made his case stronger. The quicker we leave, the better, in my opinion."
Now we're going back through the mists of time for historical news items from our dusty old files. And we'll start with 25 years ago by Jane.
And 25 years ago was May the 31st, 1991. Two little items. First, M3 hopes dashed. Winchester's campaigners for a toll tunnel through Twyford Down still hope to push their case, even after its apparent rejection by the Transport Secretary, Malcolm Rifkind. A spokesman for the Twyford Down Association has confirmed that they will press their case and promote it in a positive way. It was clear this week that association members are angry at the Southampton MP, Christopher Chope. He let it slip 3 weeks ago that the association proposal had been rejected. It now makes it difficult for them to raise money for an appraisal of their scheme. And secondly, be more welcoming. Card shops in Winchester should be replaced with souvenir shops, and shopkeepers should be more welcoming to foreign tourists. These were just two of a list of suggestions compiled by French and Winchester students following a debate on tourism in the city. 24 students from the Lycée Charles de Gaulle in Caen and 30 students from Peter Simmons College met last week. In a number of bilingual work groups, the students discussed the economic, social and political implications of tourism. After the debate, the students made their recommendations to the marketing officer of the Winchester Tourist Office, Mrs. Amanda Clough.
Shirley's going to take us back 50 years.
Right, 50 years ago, June the 4th, 1966. And this is in two parts. Headed, first of all, New Alsford Base. The Hampshire and Isle of Wight Police Authority seemed to be having a field day in new buildings at the moment. Not only has the new headquarters in Winchester just been opened, but the men in the Alsford Section Station have also recently moved into their new headquarters in Station Road. The building might not be as large as that in West Hill, but the accommodation is certainly modern, light and pleasant for the 11 men of the section to work in. Attached to the police station are two three-bedroomed houses for two of the men. built at a total cost of £10,400, including the police houses. This new building has a clean, fresh look. And then the next part is headed Manhunt Continues. The Hampshire Police manhunt in the Bishop's Waltham area accounted for 7 of the 9 Parkhurst prisoners who overpowered warders on a coach and escaped near the town on Wednesday afternoon last week. 4 were recaptured within a few hours on Wednesday, but police had to persevere until lunchtime Friday before the decision to keep the search going in the locality was justified. Then one came out into the open at the CD centre at Bishop's Waltham to ask for food. Police, with an Army Air Corps helicopter, then combed the area for many hours, followed by the capture at Corhampton Cross of 2 more prisoners.
Paul's taking us way back to 100 years ago.
There are two sections of this, dated June the 3rd, 1916. War wounded arrive. Warning was received on Monday morning that another trainload of wounded were to be sent to the hospitals at Winchester, and arrangements for the transportation of the men to the various hospitals were promptly made by Mr. C. E. Godwin of the Hampshire Automobile Association. Owners of cars were communicated with by telephone promptly on receipt of the message that the train was about to leave the ship side, and by the time of its arrival at Cheese Hill Station, there was quite a fleet of conveyances in readiness. The second item is dangerous cricket. Winchester Town Council. Councillor Hooley asked whether the Recreation Grounds Committee was aware that cricket was now being played on St Giles's Hill to the public danger, and that the ball was constantly going over into the adjoining gardens, causing damage. That the gardens were entered by persons climbing the walls, and thereby damage done, and that no one could sit on the seats in the vicinity without fear of injury. Also, if so, what steps were being taken to mitigate the danger? Councillor Matthews replied that he'd made it his business to go up on St Giles's Hill the previous evening. Cricket was then in progress. Most of the seats were occupied. The city bylaws permitted cricket on St Giles's Hill.
Only 200 years ago, please, Jane.
200 years ago was June the 3rd, 1816. Firstly, coal strike broken. At the end of last week, alarming indications of violent proceedings and intended outrage were observed among the pitmen near Newcastle. Instant measures were adopted for the preservation of the peace, and order was almost immediately restored. Several hundreds of the workmen connected with the collieries on the Wear had left off work on the alleged ground that their wages were inadequate to their support. But by the seasonable exertions of the magistrates, assisted by a strong detachment of cavalry from Newcastle, they were induced to return to their employment. 8 of the ringleaders were committed to Durham Jail. And the second little item, also not terribly local to Winchester, is sectarian violence. A private letter from Paris of Saturday last says, "The massacre at Nîmes began at the celebration of a Protestant wedding. The parties were grossly insulted by some Catholics. Blows ensued. The bridegroom fell in the affray, and in the result, upwards of 160 persons, men, women and children, were massacred. They also set fire to the house of the Protestant in question, by means of which several adjoining houses were destroyed."
Let's get back to the present, because Shirley's got Belgarum Diary.
Right. Yes. It's headed Poster Slates Holmes Plan. Anger over a controversial housing scheme for the elderly continues. A poster placed on hoardings surrounding the Extra Care scheme, which is being built on Chesil Street open-air car park, makes it clear in no uncertain terms the view of some residents about the scheme. The poster states, "Another ill-conceived and unwanted eyesore brought to you by Winchester City Council, the council that really doesn't care about either you or democracy." And accompanying this, there's actually a photograph of the poster. As reported in the Chronicle, the plans were approved in February 2015, but were met with opposition. Ian Foster of St Giles Hill Residents Association said the plans defied council policy to build sensitively in historic areas, and others were angered at the loss of a car park. Adding to the objections was City Councillor Fiona Mather, who described the building as being made up of crude blocks. No one has yet come forward and taken responsibility for the poster. Others may say creating dozens of homes for an increasingly elderly population is exactly actually what local authorities should be doing. The application went through the planning process and was approved by democratically elected councillors. And then the next part of this Belgarum attitude report here is headed Mount Blanc Climb. A Chandlersford woman is hoping to raise thousands of pounds to help teenagers with cancer by climbing Mont Blanc, the highest mountain in Western Europe. Shadi Gunjavian Connor, 40, is taking on the challenge of the famous French mountain from June 16th to raise money for the Teenage Cancer Trust. Ahead of the challenge, she has been training hard at her local gym at Fleming Park in Eastleigh and has been using calisthenics training. Shadi has climbed many mountains in the Sinai Desert, but never attempted snow conditions nor the expected 27 degrees weather conditions. The mountain is 4,810 metres high, or 15,781 feet in old money. It was first ascended in 1786 by Jacques Palma and Dr. Michel Paccard. However, she says she is determined to reach the summit of Mont Blanc a few days after her 41st birthday, and after 5 days training in the use of ice picks, crampons and ropes, she hopes to raise £10,000 and has already reached £7,240.
First person this week is by Khaled Aziz, and it's read by Paul.
And it is entitled, Just Say No. At long last, after some years of hand-wringing, it appears we have finally achieved some legislation aimed at stopping the proliferation of so-called legal highs. These are designer chemicals cooked up by fiendish individuals to get round drug laws. The cynicism of those involved in supplying these chemicals is breathtaking. Firstly, in the supply of substances which are untested, see the latest coverage of overdose victims. Secondly, for the innocently banal names given to such drugs. Meow meow is just one. And thirdly, for the pious but insincere warnings on the drug packaging about the contents not being fit for human consumption. Some legal highs suggest that they are merely horticultural, although you would be hard-pressed to find them in any garden centre. This is done in the sure knowledge that individuals would see the warning as an inducement to partake, just as when broadcasters give warnings of violence, sexual content and strong language at the start of films, many viewers will see that as a guarantee of good entertainment. Clearly, there's profit in the supply of legal highs. Shops selling these drugs have mushroomed just as dedicated cafes did in Holland. Well, Amsterdam at least, when cannabis was made legal in the Netherlands. The authorities are always playing catch-up. As soon as they put the latest legal high on the banned list, crooked chemists make tiny alterations to the formula, and defence lawyers can argue that the new molecule was not on the banned list and therefore a supplier cannot be punished. The authorities, with their hands tied, will not prosecute. How the new legislation will work remains to be seen. While it is welcome, it's hard to see that dealing purely with the supply side of the equation will solve the problem. The demand side is a much tougher nut to crack. Young people have always been keen to experiment, but not all young people. Many have tried tobacco, and most have tried alcohol, unless forbidden for religious reasons. The majority come to no harm with either. The disastrous side effects of tobacco come later in life, and in your teens and twenties, you believe you're immortal. And what's more, you can always point to the odd 60-a-day pensioner who seems immune to the ravages of lung disease. Alcohol is different. An intoxicated youngster and a car creates a lethal cocktail, as for years the pages of this august newspaper have sadly attested. There are signs, though, that the younger generation are turning their backs on smoking and, to some extent, alcohol, but there's still some way to go. Often boredom and lack of engagement is their issue. The knot of young people hanging around bus stops and shopping parades was an ever-present feature in my youth. Today it is harder to spot the drug takers. Often middle class, they opt for ecstasy, or E as they call it. At around a fiver for an evening's intoxication, it's a lot cheaper than booze. The trouble is, no one knows in advance if they'll become part of the statistical group which gets an adverse and often fatal reaction to the drug. It's the same with cannabis. We hear with shaking heads accounts of how promising teenagers with a hitherto unidentified tendency towards psychotic behaviour have had cannabis trigger disastrous and irreversible mental illness, rendering them pitifully damaged for life. The truth is, we don't know how we're going to react to even prescription drugs designed to do us good. We don't know until it is too late if we have an addictive personality. It can all be down to which poison gets us first. Some combine many vices. Alcoholics are often smokers. In the end, we can legislate, and it's good to see the pushers punished. But fundamentally, it's about personal responsibility. Perhaps we should just say no. But how?
And it's over to Jane for the editorial comment.
And the editorial comment is cynical undermining of democratic life. Some will say that the incident at the Buttercross, in which a pensioner was allegedly pushed off the monument a couple of feet from Brexit campaigner Boris Johnson, was just a bit over-exuberance in the heat of the moment. It is actually a highly worrying example of the growing intolerance infecting political discourse, national and local. The debate over the European Union is getting toxic, with some Brexit supporters inclined to bandy allegations of corruption against anyone who disagrees with them. They are so fixed in the belief of the rightness of their cause that they cannot see how anyone could honestly disagree with them. We are seeing an aspect of this in Winchester with Silver Hill and Station Approach. Some opponents of Silver Hill take the stance that only something sinister could explain why anyone could have supported the proposals. Similar undercurrents are stirring over Station Approach. Such arrogant cynicism pollutes and weakens democracy. What is to blame? Social media and the ability to behave appallingly in the comfort of anonymity has not helped. Perhaps it is just part of the general coarsening of the 20th century life. But this is an issue because history has shown that when this cynical attitude is prevalent, the only people who benefit are extremists.
And now it's time for What's On for the week beginning Monday the 2nd of June. I'll start with a couple of theatre events which have already started. Firstly, at the Mayflower, there's a musical of Mary Poppins, and this goes on till Sunday, June the 19th. There are two evening performances, Friday and Saturday, 7:30, Saturday and Sunday, 2 p.m, Tuesday to Thursday, 7:30, and Thursday, 2 p.m. It's a musical based on the story, and it's supposed to be very, very good. Box office for the further details, it's 023-8071-1811. The other event's also in Southampton. It's the Nuffield Theatre, and it's a hilarious comedy called Noises Off, all about what goes wrong in a production, seen from A, the audience's point of view, and B, from behind the scenes. It's on until Saturday, June the 25th, and it's 7:30 p.m. and there is a matinee at 2:30 p.m. and the Nuffield Theatre box office number is 023-8067-1771. On Tuesday the 7th of June, in the Winchester Cathedral at 6:30 p.m, there's a commemorative concert marking the 100th anniversary of the sinking of HMS Hampshire. This is where Lord Kitchener was killed. For further details about the concert, you can phone 01962 857 275. Then on Saturday the 11th of June, there's a Cathedral Close Street Party to celebrate both the Queen's birthday and the Dean's retirement. Also, the same day, 11th of June, in the Cathedral at 8 p.m, there's a large brass band to mark the Queen's 90th birthday. Same number for more information, 01962 857 275. Once again, on Thursday the 16th of June, in the Cathedral at 1 p.m, there's a lunchtime concert, and that is free, but you have a retiring collection. On Saturday the 18th of June, at St. Stephen's Church, Oliver's Battery Road North, there's the Fusion Choir in concert, and that is in aid of the Osteoporosis Group and the Colebrook Club. The tickets are £7, and for further details, it's 01962 861918. And I seem to think that it's at 7 p.m. for a start. Wednesday the 22nd of June, in Winchester Cathedral again, an evening, and that's at 7:30 p.m, an evening with the girls' choir. Tickets are £18, and the same telephone number for the cathedral, 01962 857 245. Open Sight, Hampshire's principal organisation for visually impaired people, is always available for help and advice on 023 8064 1244. Lighting Up time ends on Friday the 3rd of June at 4:53 a.m. and begins at 9:13 p.m. And on Wednesday the 8th of June, it ends at 4:52 a.m. and begins at 9:18 p.m. If you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you've got a problem with the recording you receive from us, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And if there's a problem with your Sapphire player, please try plugging it in and recharging before returning it as faulty. To continue with further items of general news, and we'll start with one read by Shirley.
And it's headed, Marquee Crash Driver Warned to Expect Jail. A businessman faces jail after crashing his new Mercedes into a marquee, injuring guests at a black tie event in Hampshire. Peter Bialik, who was also a guest, had been drinking alcohol before he swapped seats with his partner, who was struggling to manoeuvre the car. But in a moment of recklessness, the 66-year-old crashed the car through the marquee at around 11 p.m. on October the 3rd last year. Three people were seriously injured at the fundraising event called the Hamper Ball. Bialik admitted three counts of inflicting grievous bodily harm and one charge of wanton and furious driving, which caused bodily harm to 18 others. A judge at Winchester Crown Court told Bialik, a director of a skip hire company, that he could expect a substantial sentence of imprisonment. private party was a village fundraiser held on Dean Farm in Middle Wallop near Stockbridge. A witness at the time described the aftermath of the collision as like a bomb had gone off, with people being treated on the floor for their injuries. Bialik of Salisbury was arrested by police shortly afterwards. Recorder John Williams told him, "You are 66 and of good character. It is important that you have that put before the court with your references and anyone called. You understand this is likely to result in a substantial sentence of imprisonment." Charles Gabb, defending, said it was simple recklessness. He said, "It is understood and accepted by the Crown that there never has been a suggestion that he did what he did deliberately. It was simple recklessness. He had drunk alcohol, and Your Honour knows the consequences and background to that." Bialik will be sentenced at a later date, and he was released on unconditional bail.
This item is entitled "A Rebrand for a Coffee Shop." A prominent Winchester coffee shop, wine bar, co-owned by England rugby player Chris Robshaw, has been rebranded. Red, White, Black on Jury Street opposite the Discovery Centre has changed its name to Joe's. The England flanker opened the shop in 2013 with best friend and former Hampshire cricketer Keith Latouf. The name change means the Jury Street shop is part of a chain with Mr. Latoul's other venture of the same name in Bishop's Waltham.
And here we have devolution report defended by Chief. It is the controversial report costing £89,000 in public money at the centre of a bitter row between leaders of Hampshire's councils. But County Council leader Roy Perry has defended the use of the money, claiming it is vital to ensure thousands of residents can have their say in a series of master plans changing the political landscape of the county. He claims residents could reap the rewards of his investment by the county securing £40 million savings in the future as part of land make devolution plans. Now, rival local authority leaders have condemned him for wasting the money. Civic leaders from across the county met for a crunch meeting to debate two opposing deals for devolution of political powers from Westminster as part of radical powers aimed at giving local regions more control over decision-making. It is the latest round of a long-running battle sparked by the government's decision to negotiate a devolution deal with the Solent region. As reported, Councillor Perry announced that a new report by consultants Deloitte, commissioned by the County Council, spelled out six options for how Hampshire could be governed in the future. They included creating one huge council for the whole of Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, including Southampton, creating a unitary council but excluding Southampton and Portsmouth, and creating four or five new unitary councils to cover the Greater Southampton or Greater Portsmouth, North Hampshire, Central Hampshire and Isle of Wight areas. However, the plans were attacked by the leaders of the Solent Group, which remains in discussions with the government about its devolution deal, which could see the development of the so-called Solent City, which would include Southampton, Portsmouth, Eastleigh, Fareham, Gosport, Havant and East Hampshire and the Isle of Wight. If agreed, it could see £30 million extra funding given to the region each year, as well as greater responsibility for areas such as transport, skills and housing. Now, Councillor Perry has revealed that his report cost £89,000 to commission, but stresses that the report's findings, which will be put to the public for their feedback, could result in a new deal that will make potential savings of £40 million a year. But he stresses he is not putting forward one particular plan and says it should be up to the people. He said, "The purpose of commissioning the report from Deloitte was to provide residents with a comprehensive and independent assessment of all the options." Southampton City Council leader, Councillor Simon Letts, said, "People could have had their say without having to spend £89,000. We will be consulting our residents over devolution and looking more at bread and butter issues like who empties your bins and who runs Sure Start centres rather than a complex report like Roy." Test Valley Council leader Ian Carr, who did not attend the meeting, said, "It is reasonable use of the money, as you need to pay if you want to assess options, and sometimes it costs a lot of money."
And this one is headed, "Felix meets those who saved his life." A charity set up after a Meon Valley boy was hit by a car outside his home last year has raised almost £80,000. Now, 11-year-old Felix Barrow from Swanmore has met the people who saved his life that morning. After meeting the team, Felix presented Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance with a cheque for £10,000. The money was raised by charity Fit for Felix. Felix has defied all odds since being knocked down outside his home 7 months ago. The youngster remains at a recovery centre for children 5 days a week, where he receives specialist physiotherapy treatment. He goes home every weekend and is now able to walk and form words. Fit for Felix was set up by family and friends to raise money for the Southampton General Paediatric Intensive Care Unit, the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance, and to provide Felix with all his recovery needs. So far, Fit for Felix has raised £78,000. Felix's mum, Vanessa Barrow, said that he now sees the crew as his heroes. She said, "It's great that Felix looks up to the team. My husband and I really see how vital the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance is. A helicopter makes the journey quicker, and when the nature of the accident is serious, those few minutes can make all the difference." Mike Funge, the helicopter paramedic at the scene, said that helping Felix that morning was one of those jobs that would forever stick in his mind. He said, "The nature of the accident was so serious that I don't think any of us would forget it. Taking the patient to the hospital is normally the last we hear, so after such a traumatic accident, it's amazing to see Felix doing so well in recovery." Felix had been on his way to school when the accident happened, and his parents were told their son may never walk again. He was left in a critical condition and fought for his life on the intensive care ward for 4 weeks in an induced coma. The devastating accident left Felix with severe injuries on his left side, including a fractured skull, broken jaw, fractured eye socket, broken leg, fractured knee, elbow and ankle. Dave Baker, response car paramedic at the scene, said, "He is a truly incredible young boy. Seeing Felix's recovery progress makes me feel proud of the NHS system. It just shows that when it works, it can really work." Felix is an avid sports lover who qualified for Team GB's under-13s biathlon team at the age of 10. He hopes that soon he will be able to run again. Dr. David Sutton, air ambulance doctor, said, "You never know at the time what the outcome is going to be, so it is fantastic that Felix had made a speedy recovery." And with the article, we have a lovely coloured picture of Felix with his two sisters, Amelia and Charlotte, on each side of him, and they're wearing these t-shirts that say "Fit for Felix," and they're laughing so happily.
Council's methods praised. Winchester City Council's approach to major project management has been commended. An external review looked at whether it has the right professional skills and experience. As reported in the Chronicle, critics of the Silver Hill scheme questioned the expertise of officers in to deliver major projects. Local Partnerships was commissioned by the Council in 2015 to review its project management. The independent Claire Lloyd-Jones report into Silver Hill urged that the Local Partnerships recommendations be implemented in full. The external team found that good progress has been made, and a summary stated, the current professional skills and experience seem appropriate for the size of organisation, and appropriate external skills are brought in when required. Council leader Stephen Godfrey said, I am delighted that external insurance has been given on our approach to project management, which recognises the skills and experiences officers bring to key projects. The report gives suggestions as to how we can further improve the way we run our programme of major projects.
Here we have Tisha's 22-year battle with ME. Having endured more than 20 operations for breast cancer and gynaecological issues, Tisha Bratt was ready to put her health problems behind her. But the then 38-year-old didn't know she was about to be struck down by a little-understood health problem that would see the high-flying financial director unable to do even basic sums or write her own name, leaving her bed-bound for months at a time and still be affecting her 22 years later. She first noticed her strange new symptoms when she suddenly developed a horrendous pain in her finger. It was like someone was pushing a hot metal spike into my finger, says the 60-year-old who lives in Chandler's Ford with her husband Simon. The next day it was gone, but then a week later I felt the same pain in my toe. Then, when I was driving, I went to change gear and it felt like my left arm was going to break. It didn't make sense. Then I developed flu-like symptoms. I'd be off work for a few days, feel better, and then be ill again. I was so exhausted, I kept having to have time off. Eventually, Tisha's GP sent her to a specialist who diagnosed ME. ME is also known as chronic fatigue syndrome. ME symptoms include persistent fatigue, which does not improve with rest. Tisha believes her illness could be linked to the gruelling surgery and cancer treatment she underwent, a severe bout of neurovirus or glandular fever. I wonder if one of those things triggered it, she says. The specialist said that I'd had all these operations and my body just couldn't cope. She adds that she was delighted to receive a diagnosis, believing that a cure would be available, and was shocked to find that this wasn't the case. I thought, great, now I'll get some medicine and get better. But that's not how it is, says Tricia. I was so ill, I was largely bedbound for between 18 months and 2 years. I never thought I'd still be ill at 60. As well as suffering debilitating exhaustion and pain, Tisha says that suffering ME isn't helped by a general lack of understanding, even sometimes among the medical profession. I've had some doctors who've been really understanding, and some who've been downright rude, says Tisha, who adds that she has been left in tears by encounters with medical professionals. One doctor said I just needed to get off my backside and do some voluntary work. Other doctors have said things like, oh, are they calling it ME? I call it tiredness. Nobody chooses to be chronically ill and spend their life stuck indoors in a dressing gown with the whole world out there. Tricia adds that although her husband Simon is hugely supportive, people around her don't always understand her condition. It can be hard for friends and family to understand because people have the expectation that you'll be ill for a while and then you'll pick up, and I don't look unwell. It's been one of the loneliest experiences of my life. My husband is wonderful. Tricia says that she has tried everything she has read about to help her, from pills to diets, but nothing has really helped so far. By sheer fluke, I now have an absolutely fantastic GP, and she has referred me to a course with South Coast Fatigue, who offer specialist occupational therapy. The idea is to discipline my body into pacing itself. I've been ill for 22 years, and this is the first time I've received this kind of help. There is no known cure for ME, but I'm hopeful that this will help me cope with being ill, she says. There is growing acceptance that it's a real condition and that's gathering momentum. If I were a pessimist, it would be hell, but I'm always optimistic. And there's a lovely, cheerful photograph of Tisha looking very happy about life, but she hasn't been outside for many years and she's cuddling her lovely dog, Maddie.
This one is headed Gang Jailed After Drugs Crackdown. They came to Winchester to prey on drug addicts to fund cash-rich lifestyles and foreign holidays. But now, a gang has been sentenced to a total of more than 100 years in jail after the largest investigation yet by Hampshire's dedicated drug crime task force. 13 people have been handed sentences of up to 15 years in prison for their role in the supply of heroin and crack cocaine in Winchester and Southampton. It comes as Hampshire Constabulary continue Operation Fortress, their crackdown on organised gang and drug-related crime in Southampton. As part of the wider investigation, Operation Bunt Line was launched to look into a gang based in Manchester, which was bringing Class A drugs into Hampshire. The operation was the largest investigation carried out by the Operation Fortress team into a single organised crime group. The gang worked across Southampton city centre, especially in Canute Road and Winchester city centre, as well as Brighton. Police say they believe the gang started operating in Hampshire in January 2014. Some spent the proceeds from their deals on foreign holidays, while one, Anthony Ainsley, spent more than £10,000 on hire cars. Following the police investigation, a number of people were charged and brought to trial at Southampton Crown Court. Three were found guilty at trial, while another 10 later pleaded guilty before they were due to appear in a second trial. Between them, the 13 people who have been found guilty or admitted the crimes have received sentences adding up to 106 years behind bars. Further details on the police investigation are not available at this stage, as a second trial is set to start. 11 of those sentenced are from in and around Manchester, while one lived in Southampton and another from Hartley Whitney in Hampshire.
Prisoner had phone. A former Winchester prisoner has received a jail term for possessing a mobile phone in Winchester jail. Christopher Biles, aged 26, now serving at Her Majesty's Prison, Bullingdon in Oxfordshire, admitted having the device on December the 9th. Magistrates in Basingstoke jailed him for 8 weeks consecutive to his current term and ordered he pay an £80 victim surcharge. The use of mobile phones in Winchester Prison has been in the news recently with allegations that prison officers have smuggled the devices into the prison for prisoners and a prison worker convicted of using one to contact an inmate.
And here we have Village Fete is fun for all the family. More than 1,000 people enjoyed a day of activities and fun at the St Mary's Church and Village Fete in Kingsworthy on Bank Holiday Monday. The event, which organisers say was one of the best attended since it has been running, saw families gather at the church green, where they enjoyed music, stalls and refreshments. The fete, which this year had a vintage theme, had 1940s-era music from the Spitfire Sisters and a performance by local drama society, The Worthy Players, who staged a vintage-themed piece. The event was opened in style by the new Mayor of Winchester, Jane Rutter, who is also a member of the St Mary's Church congregation and the local city councillor. Organiser Julie Young said, "I think people enjoy the variety of live acts and activities we provided. We had a particular focus on children this year, and we had races and three-a-side football and a Birds of Prey show. It was a typical village fete for all the family, and it went really, really well, and I'm pleased with how successful it was." Proceeds from the day were more than £7,000, and the money will go towards St Mary's Church. And this is accompanied by a delightful selection of photographs, some of the Spitfire Sisters in their classic red dresses from the 40s with what looked like red fascinator hats, both singing and browsing through bargains at the clothes stall, and some children on a difficult-looking rope walk, and also eating candy floss in a nice, cheerful-looking group, obviously having great fun.
Anger as fly tippers block road. Residents in Bishop's Waltham are furious after a road was blocked by fly-tipped waste. Ashton Lane was impassable following the recent incident. Parish Councillor Tracy Conduct took the picture, and there's a picture in colour here of this ghastly-looking heap of stuff. Yes, she took the picture but was unavailable for comment. Winchester City Council launched an investigation, and in a statement to residents commenting on the pictures on Facebook said, "Thank you for bringing this to our attention. Hampshire Highways have been dealing with the road closure, and our contractor will be clearing the area with a tractor as soon as the investigations have been completed." Bishop Waltham's parish clerk, Lindsay Edge, said the council was disappointed by the issue which was raised in a council meeting. She said, "Fly tipping is an issue that comes regularly here, and we are trying a way in which to solve it. It certainly helps when it is reported to us, and we were incredibly disappointed with the amount of fly-tipping at Ashton Lane." She said the waste has now been cleared, and they believe it was the contents of a house. Oslebury also had a fly-tipping incident where junk was spewed across Jackman's Hill. There are concerns the problem could worsen if the County Council closes recycling centres.
Mum's Mountain Challenge. Six intrepid Sparsholt Primary School mothers will be taking on a mountain race in Wales called the Fun Dance to raise funds for the school. The 24 kilometres non-navigational race is over two sides of the highest mountain in the Brecon Beacons called Penavan. The route has been part of SAS selection and is considered the yardstick of a candidate's potential to pass the Special Forces selection programme. The group hope to raise £3,000, which will go towards a refurbishment of the playground at the primary school. Mother of three, Catherine Edgecombe from Crawley, said, "With so much fundraising going on in the local area, we realised that we would have to do something out of the ordinary. Everyone is really nervous, but we are training as hard as we can, so we are ready for it," she added. There appears a photograph of the six mothers kitted out. One is called Gemma Farrand, Catherine Edgecombe, Moena Sullivan, Penny Smith, Amy Ainsworth, and Debbie Caldwell.
And here we have Cubs Help with conservation work in school grounds. Many hands made light work as cubs pitched in to help with conservation work at a Winchester school. The 8th Winchester Cubs and parents of pupils at Oliver's Battery School came to the school grounds to earn their community badge by helping with some conservation work. They worked to remove and burn the invading dogwood, blackthorn scrub and bramble to allow light to get to the meadow species below and in turn support an ecosystem that will help support the bats and birds that visit the site. School spokesman Maggie Shelton said, "Together we cut back the scrub, got a good fire going and achieved the task." They also had time to create a small space at the far path to give butterflies somewhere sheltered to bask. After the work was done, the cubs enjoyed toasting marshmallows and had a family picnic. It was a wonderful day, and I would like to thank the 8th Winchester Cubs, their parents and others who came for all their hard work. It will really help the wildlife on our site and also within the greater landscape. Thank you for your great team spirit, added Mrs. Shelton.
And this one is headed Homes Approved. More than 100 homes are to be built in Bishop's Waltham after planners gave the green light. The scheme will see 120 houses constructed on Albany Drive, of which 40% will be affordable housing. Developer Southcott Homes originally proposed 150 homes, but this was strongly objected by local residents. The parish council also objected, calling the plans an overdevelopment of the space. The proposals were subsequently rejected by Winchester City Council. However, Southcott then reduced the size to 120 homes. Planning Officer Simon Avery told the planning committee, "Officers are satisfied that this is a very high quality scheme. Open space will be provided along with a cycle route and footpath. Southcott will also plant a row of oak trees behind the estate, replacing two they need to cut to make way for an entrance road." However, Councillor Robert Shields of Bishop's Waltham Parish Council was not impressed by the designs and said improvements were still needed. "Uniformity is not a characteristic of Bishop's Waltham," said Councillor Shields, commenting on the design. "The brick walls could become barriers for wildlife and reptiles. This needs to be addressed fully." The councillor was also unimpressed by the amount of local housing plans being approved. "We are supposed to meet our local plan quota of 500 new homes by 2021, he added. "However, we already have 400 homes in the pipeline, and it's only 2016.
The future of a crisis-hit health trust will be debated in Parliament. Southern Health and National Health Service Trust will be the subject of fierce debate after a Hampshire Member of Parliament called for it to be brought before the House of Commons. Fareham MP Stella Fernandez said the crisis around the trust, which has come under intense scrutiny for failing in vulnerable patients, was causing huge concern for many people. The trust has been condemned by the Care Quality Commission after failing to protect patients and investigate the deaths of hundreds of people in its care following a scathing independent report. And recently it was branded a shambles after rebel governors held a breakaway meeting in a bid to demand improvements, leading to calls for Health Secretary Jeremy Hunt to intervene. Chief Executive Katrina Percy has refused responded calls to stand down. Ms Fernandez, who leads on health issues for the Hampshire All-Party Group of MPs, is expected to launch the debate on June the 8th, which will feature a response from a minister. The Care and Quality Commission announced just last month that it had issued a warning notice to the Trust to improve its governance arrangements to ensure robust investigation and learning from incidents and deaths to reduce future risks to patients. This came after a focused CQC inspection in January, which was held as part of the response to the previous independent report into the Trust's investigation into deaths. The Trust's chairman resigned ahead of the publication of the full CQC report, and NHS Improvement has appointed a new chairman, Tim Smart, and taken further regulatory action, inserting additional conditions to its contract to allow changes to be made to the Trust's management if progress is not made with implementing changes. MP Ms. Fernandez said, "I am pleased to have secured this debate. The issues surrounding Southern Health have caused huge concerns for many people, and it is right that as MPs we get the chance to debate them in Parliament. I know many of my colleagues in Hampshire and beyond have expressed serious doubts about the governance of the Trust and remain to be convinced that the necessary improvements are being made quickly enough." A spokesman for the Trust said the organisation is aware of the forthcoming debate and would comment after it had taken place.
And here we have Lords praise prison work. Winchester Prison has been praised in the House of Lords for the way it engages with inmates' families. Conservative peer Michael Farmer, in a debate about prison reforms announced in the Queen's speech, told fellow peers, "HMP Winchester has transformed how prisoners engage with their families while inside. When the first week induction process includes a session that brings home to you how hard it will be for your children to have a father inside, it can lay a totally different foundation for how someone serves their sentence."
I'm afraid that concludes our extract for this week. Thank you to our editors, Sheila Shepherd, Irene Dowding, Jean Gardner and Jane Thomas. Thanks to our copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Shirley Parnell.
Goodbye.
Paul Newman.
Bye-bye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, Roy Faithfull, thank you for listening. Goodbye for now. And I hope you have an enjoyable week ahead. Excuse me. When you're finished with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and please place the address label on the wallet too and return the wallet as soon as possible. Thank you and goodbye again.